ESPN College Football Podcast, hosted by Kirk Herbstreit and Matt Barry.
Monday is back. So is the ESPN College Football Podcast. Matt Barry, Kirk Herbstreit alongside. We will get into everything this week, including why we love the sport. But two things before we get started. Listen to Bald Men on Campus, a new ESPN podcast hosted by Jay Billis, LaFonso Ellis, and Seth Greenberg. College basketball tips off this week already. And these ESPN basketball personalities giving you an all-access pass inside the world of college basketball. Bald Men on Campus. Listen wherever you get your podcast. And watch NBA Today, 3 Eastern, noon Pacific on ESPN, the ESPN app. And listen to the show wherever you get your podcast. All right, Herbie, the work is out of the way. Time to talk ball. I'll lead you with this. You know, the one thing I kind of love about our Monday slot on this podcast, one, we get to recap the weekend. But two, we get to miss all the ranking shrapnel because we're the day before the new rankings and we're too far past the last rankings. So we kind of just get to talk football and talk what happened over the weekend.
So nice. That doesn't crank up till Tuesday at about 7:30 p.m. Eastern. All of a sudden that cranks up. Although I do like a rankings thing on Sunday mornings, which is just a mistake, you know. how do you rank these teams, bro? I mean, there's Georgia, and I saw you did the same thing. I didn't realize you did it until after I had done it. Georgia, and then I put a space, and then it's like literally go grab a hat, throw about 7 names on a piece of paper, and throw them in the hat, rattle that thing around, reach in. Pull that out. Hey, okay. We have Cincinnati. All right. We have Cincinnati too. I mean, that's where I am at this point. I've never been like this. There's always been, you know, we've been in the middle of that Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State run for seems like forever. And then it's like, okay, who are you going to put at 4, 5, or 6? That was the only debate for years.
Yeah.
And now it's Georgia. And then what in the heck do you do with Alabama? What do you do with Cincinnati? How long does Oregon and Ohio State? Well, they had the head-to-head. Ohio State struggles against Nebraska. Oklahoma, thankfully, they didn't have to play and look bad, so maybe they move up. Michigan State loses to Purdue, but they beat Michigan. So, I mean, does Michigan State have to be ahead of Michigan? I don't come from that school of thought. Some people are like, nope, they beat them on the field. And that's the way. But they were up 30-14 just because Michigan State, to their credit, won that day. Does that mean I have to keep them ahead? I don't feel that way. Now, at the end of the year, if they're both just right there, so close, how do you separate them? Then fine. The head-to-head could make a difference for me. But I don't have a problem putting Michigan ahead of Michigan State. I just don't. I mean, Michigan State's been outplayed against Nebraska. They're outplayed against Indiana. They're outplayed much of the Michigan game and found a way to win. So they've been one of those teams you got to give them credit. But the Purdue game, they saw the upset potential coming.
Yeah, everyone called for it.
Everybody. Usually those upsets happen when no one talks about it.
Correct.
Then it comes. The whole world was talking about it. That's the only reason I picked Michigan State, because I thought it was way too obvious that the upset was going to happen. And sure enough, it happened. So what do you do with Michigan and Michigan State? So the whole thing is just a mess.
It, you know, what was the knock? The knock on Oklahoma and the knock on Cincinnati after the rankings are out is, well, they don't beat inferior opponents handily. They don't beat. Okay, fine. Granted. But then you look in Saturday, and Saturday just leveled the playing field. Look, I know it's Alabama, LSU, and I know LSU has 5 stars, but LSU's broken. Butte, Stingley Jr., coach is fired. They could have and probably should have beaten Alabama on Saturday. Michigan State loses. Who was another one that kept it?
Ohio State, Nebraska.
Ohio State, Nebraska. Like, these are... Everyone on Saturday did exactly what we'd been ripping teams for, which was hanging around with teams they should beat. And so does this mean that that there's too much parity? There's a lot of parity in college football, which I love. But coming in on this Monday, I'm with you. Let's just put Georgia up there and just let the rest take care of itself. There's too much football to be played to get fired up over where Cincinnati's going to be on Tuesday. Because frankly, I don't care where they are. I really don't care where they are on Tuesday. I don't.
Yeah, I'm just so everyone knows, I'm not married to my rankings in any way at all, other than Georgia is at one.
Right.
Other than that, if you want to poke holes in my rankings, I don't blame you. Because I essentially flipped coins to put my teams where I put them from 2 to down to 7. I have no idea what to do. I'm just waiting for the games to be played. I'll flip, like right now, I will flip a team in or out just because there's really no rhyme or reason to give teams a benefit over another team. Cincinnati, I think, is an interesting squad because they have potential to be a better team. Forget ranking them against other teams. Rank them against the team that they can be. Their own standard, to me, is much higher than the way they have played now for 3 straight weeks. I kept bragging on them after they'd not just beat Notre Dame, but they beat Temple the way you're supposed to beat Temple. They beat UCF the way you're supposed to beat UCF. And then Navy, you know, they didn't play great football. Tulsa, they just didn't play great football. The week before that, Tulane, they didn't play great complete football. So 3 weeks, and Luke, if Luke were on here this podcast with us, Luke would be, I don't blame you. We're not, we got to play better football. So I think Cincinnati, I dropped them out all the way out of the top 6 this week because they're just not, it's been consistent trend of them not playing great football. You could say, hey, it's all about winning. You're right. They won. And that's why they're still in position. And if they ever do crank it from 4th up to 5th gear and start playing the way they're capable of playing, then they're going to climb. Then they'll go back to where they need to be. But you shouldn't feel obligated because they're undefeated and they're a group of 5 and they're disrespected and I better put them up there. No, there's no obligation here. They're not playing up to their own standard, and they have to face the consequences for that. It's as simple as that.
Anybody who watched Cincinnati play Notre Dame, who, by the way, keeps winning, is a top 10 team. They'll find themselves inside the top 10, I would imagine, this week, would say, hey, Cincinnati is one of the best teams in the country.
Sure.
But we live in a week in and week out society, which I'm fine with. One of the biggest things I've had with the College Football Playoff Committee that I think they're saying that is legitimate, that I do respect about it, is I do want kind of a week to week barometer of where these teams are. And then I don't need to figure this thing out till after championship weekend. What good does it do me to sit here and scream about Oklahoma being at 8th or Ohio State being at 5th? What good does that do me now? Nothing. I mean, there's so much.
It does a lot of good for a lot of people though, man.
I could.
There are a lot of frustrated people when it comes to these rankings. And I'm with you. I just don't get it because I don't have conviction on my rankings. How can you have conviction with your rankings unless you have an agenda? How do you have such conviction for your rankings? Because all this intel that we're gathering is invalid at this point. We need more intel to finally stand on top of a table and say, this is what I know. Right now, I can't do that. And like, nobody can, by the way. Nobody can do that.
Would you want a medical diagnosis without all your tests back?
Right.
I wouldn't. Don't diagnose me with something when you don't have everything in play to make the diagnosis. That's why when you look at this week, and I firmly believe this, Kirk, with what happened with Michigan State, with what happened with Baylor, with what happened with some of the other upsets around the country, Wake Forest, some of these other schools that are out there. Before this week, we had an AP poll and we had a coaches poll with the number attached to these particular schools. For the first time this year, we had a playoff number attached to the school. And sometimes, whether they'll admit it or not, that number attached to them at this stage in the season, that's another inherited amount of pressure that wasn't there the week before. Michigan State comes into Purdue. They're not the third-ranked team in the country, according to the Associated Press. They're the third-ranked team, according to the College Football Playoff Committee. That's a whole different kind of football.
Well, the pressure in November is just different because the games are, you're coming down the stretch. and the games have a whole different meaning. And then when you throw on top of that rankings, that's why I'm always so impressed, you know, with the longevity of Alabama and even Clemson before this year, and schools like Ohio State and even Oklahoma, I would throw in there, is they're used to getting into November and playing games when they could be playing an unranked team who that day they bring their fastball, and you've got to be ready for that week in and week out. And it's hard for college players and teams to be able to match other teams' A game every week. And when you're in the top four or top six, that's what you're going to get. And so even when you know it's coming, like Michigan State, you know, this past case, let's bounce around some of these conferences. I was down in Tuscaloosa, and Alabama, you kind of knew people could say whatever they want about LSU. And they had eight starters out on defense alone, not to mention Boutte, the top receiver on offense. They're playing so many young players, but those young players, if we were playing backyard football, you'd be like, yeah, I'll take six. Yeah, I'm going to take that. He's a true freshman. Yeah, I'm going to take him. He's nice looking. Like, there's a lot of those kind of guys that still are on that roster. And if I were an LSU fan, I would be so mad that why can we play the way we can against Alabama and Florida? Two games where they were clearly inspired to prove everybody wrong. But we can't play that like that against Kentucky. We can't play like that against Ole Miss. Like, this is what this team is capable of doing. And this is why Coach O is going to be let go, is there is potential on that team. Now, they threw, as I said during the broadcast, they threw everything at Alabama, especially early, the fake punt. What do they have to lose? But Alabama, this is not the same Alabama team. They have one first rounder on defense and Will Anderson.
Who's
in the rest of them? He's special. But the rest of them are good players, but I'm going based on Alabama. You're used to seeing they had three first rounders in this class, three or four on that next class, and that class underneath them, I think they may have three or four, all on one defense. They don't have that. And worse than that, they're miscommunicating on the back end. And so they're vulnerable. Like that Iron Bowl, do not just say, oh, they got the Iron, they'll win that. You know, if you're an A&M fan, after A&M won last week, beat Auburn, people forget this. If A&M beats Ole Miss, they keep winning, and Auburn pulls off the upset and knocks off Alabama, Texas A&M is going to Atlanta.
Yeah.
So don't just assume that Alabama is going to go play Georgia in the SEC championship. There's still a lot of different things that can happen, and A&M is still in a position where they could get there. But yeah, this Alabama team, there's some great talent, obviously, the way he recruits. But this was an LSU team that was playing hard and playing to win, and an Alabama team, especially early, that was not. And I don't necessarily look at that as like, well, Bama, they're not very good, because look at LSU, they're awful. And there's something about those uniforms on the field together that brings out the best. And LSU was ready to play. And I really felt they were, as I'm calling the game, I thought LSU was going to make a play late and win it, you know, and they just came up a little bit short. But Bama is a talented team, but they are a beatable team. And we'll see, you know, if they're able to get through this. But it's right now, it's hard to imagine them beating Auburn on the road and beating Georgia if they get there in Atlanta.
What we see about Alabama every year is typically, Herb, they'll have that one game where it's close and Nick Saban writes the ship, coaches them up, moving on. We've seen it a couple times now this year. We saw it against Florida. We saw it a little bit against Tennessee. And then we see it against LSU.
And A&M, obviously.
Yeah, and then they lose to A&M, and you're just not used to seeing that many fights. And look, we're spoiled. Alabama's an all-timer based on some of the teams that he's trotted out there. So it's natural when you have all that talent go to the NFL drafts last year. That's what I was saying at the beginning of the year. So you're telling me you can just trot in new receivers, although Jamison Williams has been a star. New starting quarterback, Bryce Young's been really good. But there's certain areas of Alabama that just doesn't look very Alabama. And you're the football that's left to be played. I tried to trot out that scenario on College Football Final. Like, hey, wait a second. Let's not put a Georgia-Alabama game in Atlanta yet, because A&M's playing as good as anybody in the country, and they proved it again Saturday. Like, they are one of those teams. They'll slow bleed you on defense, kind of like Georgia, and they've got just enough with Spiller. Calzada look good, although I wouldn't lower my shoulder on Smoke Monday again. But they do enough to say, God, how did they lose to Arkansas and Mississippi State?
I know. But they, to their credit, they've been able to bounce back from that. I think the Alabama game just was a springboard into where they are. You're right about their defense. I mean, Bo Nix, we were talking about him last week. Bo Nix, it was like, okay, the light's gone off. He's got this new scheme. He's playing well. And then you could say, well, Bo Nix slipped back to being Bo Nix, you know, the inconsistency. I think it had everything to do with Texas A&M. And Mike Elko and that defense and the way they played, he completed like close to 50% of his passes, just a non-factor. They took every aspect away. Now, it was still a close game. You know, I think going into the fourth quarter, it's 6-3. And then they had the turnover and the game got flipped, but not a whole lot of offense. The SEC had some great depth as far as storylines. You know, South Carolina, we can all say, what's the heck's Dan Mullen? You know, here he is 4-5. The Gators are 4-5. Everybody's up in arms down at Gainesville with Dan Mullen. They're frustrated. He's just fired his defensive coordinator, Todd Grantham. He lets his offensive line coach go. You know, we're in the middle of the season, still three games to be played. Shane Beamer with a monster win. So yeah, depending on your view of that game, it's either what's wrong with Florida or Shane Beamer, you know, changing things down at South Carolina and smiling and the kids, the post-game presser. He's got his kids around. It's just, isn't it just a different feel to South Carolina football right now? They're a game away from getting bowl eligible, which would be just a huge year for them. And then the Tennessee story. Wait,
Kirk, before you move on from South Carolina, yeah. I mean, they started an FCS quarterback who transferred in because they're down to their third quarterback.
Right.
I mean, Beamer,
think about that.
They had a coach, Zeb Nolan, playing quarterback. Doty's out for the year. So just a stack on top of that. And we'll get to them later in the why we love the sport. But you look at it, you couldn't have any worse quarterback situation in the country. And to be bowl or get close to bowl eligibility. Anyway, that Beamer in South Carolina, that's a good story. But yeah, Tennessee, Kentucky, another good story is our boy Heupel.
Yeah.
I mean, who would have thought?
Who would have thought at the beginning of the year? Think about, you got to back up with Tennessee. Not only do they make a coaching change, new athletic director, there's NCAA concerns. I mean, there's players transferring out. What is left of Tennessee football in 2021? Coming out of COVID.
Yep.
You know, I don't know if a lot of their fans really knew a lot of the players that they had the chance to cheer on when the season first started. And the way things get started, you know, they beat Bowling Green, they lose in a shootout to Pitt. They're sitting there at 1-2 after, or, you know, they were 2-2 after they lost to Florida. And since then, they've become a great story. Hendon Hooker's become one of the more efficient quarterbacks in the entire conference. They're figuring out Josh Heupel's up-tempo scheme. He's got playmakers around him. When you go that fast, it's so hard not to turn the ball over, and they're not turning the ball over. I mean, Hooker has been ridiculous. Two interceptions on the year. Now you fast forward it to a shootout win against UK, and all I know is I just want to see Tennessee's offense on the field against Georgia's defense. I want to see Hooker with that up-tempo offense at home against Georgia. And Georgia, I assume, is going to win the game. But Tennessee's offense, Georgia's defense. If there's one matchup this Saturday you're going to want to watch, it's that. It's just how will that play out? Because that's a hard offense to prepare for with your scout team. It's tough to simulate that kind of speed at which the plays are coming. And this, of all the games Georgia has left to play, including Alabama, this will be the, if they play them in Atlanta, this will be the toughest offense they play until they get into the playoff.
Yeah, I think Hendon Hooker went for 315 and four touchdowns the other night. And as you see Tennessee grow, Josh Heupel never had a fair shot at the beginning of this anyway, because he was connected to Mike White, his AD that came over from Central Florida. And so that was kind of like, oh, hey, look, he's bringing his buddy over. This is a connection with AD and coach. That's all cute, well, and good. So I don't think Tennessee fans really embraced the hire to begin with. And so I think he was already down 1-0. You mentioned the sanctions carried over from Pruitt. You're down 2-0. So you've got a task to make your team believe, your community believe. It was the Tennessee portal. Everybody was out of there. And I think I've said it on the podcast already. I wouldn't, if I had a vote for SEC Coach of the Year, depending on how this thing plays out, I don't know that I wouldn't give it to Heupel. Kirby Smart's obvious because he's got the best team in the country, but he had the best talent in the country. Heupel came in with what was left over, and I can't wait to see him call ball plays against Georgia. I need Georgia to get messed with just a little bit. Mess with them just enough so I can really, really get an idea of who they are.
Yeah, fair. So we have South Carolina as a win away. By the way, we have two tough games left to see if they can get that last game to get bowl eligibility. Tennessee have Georgia. I think they have South Alabama and Vandy. So there's a really strong chance that the Vols are going bowling. Arkansas, Sam Pittman after his game said, I don't know where we're going, but we're going bowling. They ended up knocking off Mississippi State. So congrats to Pig Suey. That's a great accomplishment. Big Ten, we touched on Michigan State, and you know, we'll see what the committee does with them after the 40-29 loss to Purdue. They're obviously going to slide down. Will they be ahead of Michigan, behind Michigan? Will both of those schools be ahead of Oklahoma, who is idle? Will they be behind Oklahoma? Will the committee still hold on to that theme of a week ago? Will they beat them head-to-head? So that therefore they're going to be ahead. We'll have to find that out Tuesday night. But outside of that, I think the biggest story to me was Ohio State, the scare that they had in Lincoln. This is an offense that the last 2 weeks now, while they were humming, we're talking about Tennessee's offense, Ohio State with C.J. Stroud, it was like 57 points per game for three or four straight weeks going into Penn State. Penn State gives them a close call. They go on the road to Lincoln. One common thread between those two games is red zone struggles. I think they're 1 of 6 in their matchup touchdown in the red zones, 1 of 6 against Penn State, 1 of 3. So 2 of 9 red zone efficiency. Now they got field goals in there, but not scoring touchdowns for an offense that was just scoring at will. That's a huge issue for Ryan Day and CJ Stroud that they're going to have to figure out. They've got Purdue, they got Michigan State, and then they go to Ann Arbor. That's an offense right now that has got to figure it out. More than capable of doing it, but they're going to have to figure that red zone issue out.
Yeah, I would say Purdue and the upset makers aren't the spoiler makers, what everybody's calling them. I don't know that they're going to sneak up on Ohio State. I think the Buckeyes are pretty well aware of what Purdue's capable of doing. And Garrett Wilson didn't play. Jackson Smith and Jigba career day, historic day, 15 catches, 240 yards and a touchdown. Of any unit in the country, I think Ohio State, top to bottom, skill receivers, receiver room, Travion Henderson. If there's one unit that I think that could snap out of a funk in a matter of minutes, it is Ohio State. Nebraska's got a nice defense. It's not elite, but it's really good. So as the Big Ten turns, I mean, we talk about the Big Ten East, but here we are. If you look at the Big Ten West, everyone's 4-2, and I love it because I would put my Big Ten West mortgage chips, I'd slide them all in on the Wisconsin Badgers, and I wouldn't have one regret doing it. That's a team that has found its stride, its identity, and is beating teams the way that you should when they're an inferior opponent. I love
Wisconsin. Wisconsin was left for dead. They were 1-3. And you speak of identity, they didn't have an identity. Their best identity on offense was to maybe punt on first down after the first 4 weeks. They were turning the ball over. They didn't have a quarterback that was playing with any confidence. And to the credit of their coach, because think about today's day and age, says a lot about the character on that football team to be 1-3. Wisconsin has top 10 aspirations. You go to practice, you're 1-3, fresh off of back-to-back losses to Notre Dame and Michigan. Your season's gone, you know, for all intents and purposes, as far as your goals.
Yeah.
And they start chipping away and they figure out, you know what we're going to do? We're done throwing the ball and turning it over. We're going to rely on Jimmy Leonard and one of the best defenses in the country. We're going to run it every play and we're not going to turn it over, and let's punt and let's just be smart. And they've grown, obviously. They're throwing a little bit, but it's still defense, special teams, field position, run the ball, don't turn it over. And they have won 5 straight games by doing that and looked good doing it. Now, all of a sudden, you take that 1-3 team. Now you have a confident team that has Northwestern. They have Nebraska, both at home. They go to Minnesota. Very strong chance they finish this thing out by winning 8 straight, going into Indianapolis and playing in the Big Ten championship. And it's just a credit to that program, to Paul Chris, to the players, the type of kids he recruits, for them not to throw in their hat and give up on the season and just kind of keep pounding that rock. And it's going to pay off for them because, like you said, they've got that identity. It's going to be tough to beat for any of these remaining games they have left on their schedule.
You hear coaches say it all the time, and we'll all be guilty of kind of rolling our eyes when they say, you know, we just got to take a one game at a time, one game at a time. We'll get Wisconsin's living proof that that's not just coach speech. That's got to be how you attack it. Cause at 1-3, you're right. They could just fold it up and say, well, hell, it's not our year. Yeah. All right, let's win one game and get to 2-3. All right, let's win the next game, get to 500. Guess what? You win the next game, you're above 500. And then you start believing. So that Big Ten West between Minnesota, who I think was questionably ranked, probably shouldn't have been. They got beat by Illinois. Iowa's still hanging around. They finally made a change at quarterback. Petras has been dicey at best. They beat Northwestern 17-12. That was not exactly something you'd hang in the Louvre, but it's going to be fun to watch down the stretch.
I agree. And it seems like it's going to come down to Paul Bunyan's axe to decide who ultimately goes. I just want to say this, because Minnesota has been a great story to me, that they've been winning games despite, you know, a lot of injuries in that backfield. And Brett Bielema, he beats Nebraska at the beginning of the year. He pulls off a major upset by going to State College and knocking off Penn State, who at the time was, I think, 7th in the country. And now they play Minnesota, top 20 team, again on the road and win the game. So I'm not saying that Illinois is, you know, a team that's going to go do great things this year. But Brett Bielema, after 3 weeks ago, he publicly questioned the team, what he had to work with. And everyone was like, what is Brett Bielema doing? You can't do that. Ever since then, doesn't this team feel like they're playing differently? And they're no longer just, oh, it's Illinois. That's a win. You got to be careful with Illinois. There's another team. How many formations have you seen where they've got like 5 offensive tackles in the game or 4 tight ends in the game? They don't even have a receiver in the game. So it's a very unusual outlier offense to prepare for. They're playing good defense. I just think, more importantly, in your first year, you're just trying to get any kind of traction
buy-in.
Doing that.
Yeah.
And he's going to recruit to this kind of theme of an identity. And we're going to be hard. It's going to be like Wisconsin of like 8 years ago. That's what he's going to build in Champaign. You may not be worried about him in 2021, but moving to 2022 and beyond, if I'm an Illinois fan, I'm liking what I'm seeing from the team and the grit in which they're playing, which they've not played with for, I want to say, since maybe 2007, when they went to the Rose Bowl with Juice Williams.
Juice, yeah.
And lost to USC. So it's fun to see some of these brands that have been off the radar just showing, you know, just show some fight, man. Just play hard, compete. Sometimes it works out for you.
The hardest thing for a coach in year one, and it's the one thing that a coach in year one has to have, is buy-in. You're a new guy coaching other guys' recruits. They're not your players. You inherited them. How do you buy in? How do you buy into what we're trying to sell and build? And Bielema's done it. I mean, Bielema's done that. It's not always pretty, but Brett Bielema football isn't pretty. It's physical. It's in the trenches, and that's how you're going to win.
Yeah, we go to the Big 12. You speak of first-year coaches, Steve Sarkisian at 1.4-1 and up, I want to say, by 21 on arrival in a neutral site. Everybody is like, oh, my gosh, it's too good to be true. We're 4-1. We're going to kill Oklahoma
today. We got Oklahoma on the ropes.
I mean, on the ropes, they were blowing them out.
Right.
In the first quarter, they were up by 21 points. They had to change to Caleb Williams. Spencer Rattler goes out. Texas fans are, they're dancing in the streets of Dallas. I mean, this is great. And from that point that Caleb Williams went into the game, things get, you know, obviously out of control. And, oh, my gosh. And then they follow that up with games where they could have very easily beaten Oklahoma State, very easily could have beaten Baylor. And they have second half collapses in really three straight weeks, OU, Oklahoma State, and Baylor. And then they go to Ames, and it's like they got nothing left.
Same thing, second half.
Yeah, and they have lost four straight games. They were 4-1. They're now 4-5. And Sark is being challenged. They have KU this week, West Virginia, and Kansas State. I'm just hoping they get bowl eligible and try to get this thing going in a better direction. Yeah. But there's a team that needs to catch a break right there.
What is that in year one with Sark? Because Tom Herman did a nice job of recruiting. Bijan Robinson was the top-rated running back coming out of high school. They've done their part in bringing in talent. Do you think it's as simple as, Sark, this is my message. This is how we're going to do it here. Does that translate to on the field? Is that where some struggles can come from? Because second half, the way that they've done it, I can't put my finger on what it is. So I've got to go off the field to say maybe the blow up with Joshua Moore that was much publicized. I don't know. I'm trying to figure out Texas because I can't.
I think Sark's trying to figure out Texas. You know, I think if it happens once, you know, it happened. Let's go to work. Let's get ready to play. Let's go beat Oklahoma State. And they came out playing incredibly well. And then I don't know if it's you give up a big play and it's a little bit of a, oh no, here we go again kind of thing. But it's very rare, and I promise you, it's hard maybe to fix in the middle of a season. Mm-hmm. But when you get to the backside, you hope to get to a bowl game. You hope to get those additional practices, and then you get into your winter conditioning after the bowl game. And like I said, you pound home with fourth quarter drills that instead of this being a weakness, it's going to become a strength of ours. Not to say that they didn't do that before, because where he came from in Alabama, knowing Sark, they already did that.
Yeah.
But I'm talking signage up in the building, mm-hmm. all over the locker room. We're a fourth quarter team, fourth quarter, fourth quarter, fourth quarter. Just pound it into there. When they go to training table, something about fourth, everywhere, fourth quarter. And so it becomes part of who you are. That's what I guarantee is going to be even more of an emphasis, because it's weird to see them lose this many games where they've been able to play well early and then just let things get sideways on them. But I hope it does. You know, I Iowa State, that was a big win. They needed that after their loss to West Virginia. They're able to recover and win that game. Kansas State takes care of Kansas, 35-10. They're sitting there at 6-3. Having a solid year. TCU was probably the big story of the weekend.
Yeah,
with Jerry Kill taking over, everybody wondered, you know, this team going to play hard for Jerry, and Gary Patterson out, and of course a home game against a team that was ranked 12th in the country in Baylor, and they played a complete game, got some big plays in the pass game with a backup, you know, quarterback and Chandler Morris, who looks that he's more than capable of playing it, and had a huge, highly recruited guy. Dad is Chad.
Yeah.
And he just looked great. And I when I did the TCOU game about 3 weeks ago, I could watch him in warm up. He just had a little something about him. And it was like, you know, I love Max Duggan. I think he's phenomenal, but he's had a lot of injuries. So this kid, Chandler Morris, finally gets his chance and played really well. So that, I was impressed with TCU playing with some life there. And how about Oklahoma State? Man, you go into Morgantown, hard to do, and especially when you're a ranked team. And these boys at defense, that group travels no matter where they play, And they're winning with Mike Gundy the old-fashioned way with defense and running the football, and it's working out good for them.
Yeah, quick note on TCU. First time they've gotten a win without Gary Patterson as their head coach since November of 2000. And so, I mean, that's hard to comprehend. About that. That is hard. That's hard to comprehend, but also hard to comprehend. You just mentioned Oklahoma State. They're a defensive school now. I don't want to hear anybody talk to me about the offense because Spencer Sanders, they've got a nice running back, and Warren. I mean, they're a good offense, but this is a defensive team. And what was the calling card of Bob Stoops back in the day? It was the defense. Yeah. It was the Roy Williams. It was the Dusty Dvorak. It was those guys up front. It was the Teddy Lehmans. It was Bob Stoops. Yeah. Now it's Oklahoma State that plays defense. That's why, for me, if you looked at Bedlam right now, that game is setting up to be the game of the year just because of stylistically how they've completely flipped. OU's offense, Grinch is doing a nice job with the defense, but Oklahoma State, man, they can play. They can play football.
By the way, you just mentioned Bedlam, made me think of Caleb Williams and the potential individual opportunity he may have on bigger stages beginning Saturday against Baylor. He's got Iowa State. He's got Bedlam. He's got a Big 12 championship. Take any player in the country right now, put him in 2012, 2015, 2016. Like, who would be a Heisman candidate? We're late in the year now. We got 4 weeks of football left to be played. Usually there's somebody's emerged. I keep saying that Caleb Williams, because how dynamic he is and because he hasn't done anything yet against a big team except Texas. It was a big stage, even though Texas isn't a great team. But he has like Heisman moments feel to his playmaking ability. And I think on a stage like Baylor, Iowa State, Oklahoma State in a Big 12 championship, he's going to be afforded to maybe start to climb up. But right now, dude, Matt Corral, Kenneth Walker, CJ Stroud, Bryce Young, Sam Howell, like
Gordon Davis.
You could name anybody that was a guy. They really don't have a campaign going right now. Like, I don't, it's wide. Can you ever remember getting to November 13th and there really not being the guy for the Heisman Trophy?
No. And it just kind of, it's a good way to look at how we started the show. Can you remember being this late in the season where, you know, one team and everybody else, only one team has separated itself and really no player has separated themselves in the Heisman Trophy race. And I go back to, I believe it was 2003. I was working in Oklahoma and they had this true freshman by the name of Adrian Peterson running the ball. And I remember covering that team and I wanted to see Adrian touch the ball every single time because you knew something special was about to happen. That's the way it is with Caleb right now. Anytime that he plays and anytime that they're on offense, you're just waiting for that special thing to happen.
Absolutely.
That's the criteria of a Heisman candidate to me. And how special is he?
He's the only guy in the country that you really feel. There's a lot of great players, but Will Anderson makes you feel that way watching Alabama's defense. But Caleb Williams is one of the few guys right now, like I said, you don't want to leave the room because you want to see what he might do. You want to watch it live. You want to see what he can do. How about Pac-12? We got to keep bouncing here.
Yeah.
Utah's a team I don't think anybody wants to play.
Nope.
And Oregon gets them next week in Salt Lake. Man, they have found it. You know, they had a big Friday night win. What was your take on the Pac-12 this weekend? Oregon survived that trip up to Seattle too.
Yeah, Oregon survives. I know you were calling a game at the time, and I kind of hit you guys with that during the cut-in. But the weather in Seattle was just disgusting. It was brutal, and that weather is the one thing that could level any playing field in any game. I don't care what the talent disparity is, and so the fact that Oregon went in there, Travis Dye, 211 yards and a touchdown. Oregon's the team. Utah is going to smack you in the mouth. That's going to be a fun one to watch. There aren't many other stories in the Pac-12, but Utah and Oregon. Herm Edwards got the win against USC. The Fox got more coverage than the actual game did, but that was just kind of a fun thing with football. And
how about Colorado and Arizona? Arizona got a win.
Jed Fish, congratulations. Yeah. That's a 20-game losing streak. You want to talk about having to sell people 20 games in a row and you get the win. And so Pac-12, look, you and I have talked about this ad nauseum. It's a USC league. They're the national brand. Oregon's really, really good. And so Oregon, for the sake of the conference, needs to keep winning. Although I'm going to say it here Monday, Utah is going to win the game. Utah's winning that game. They just
they're probably going to play. It's a precursor for what's in Vegas. They're probably going to have to beat, if you're Oregon, you're going to have to beat Utah twice.
That's tough.
Both times away from Autzen. Once obviously down at Salt Lake, the other time at a neutral site in Vegas at a Pac-12 championship. That's tough. Tough.
I know. That's why in this year that we've seen, we see top five teams go down all the time. I think that's the one this week. I really do.
ACC Wake Forest goes down to North Carolina. We always talk about Carolina. They're not having a great year. They're 5-4 now, but so much firepower and so much potential. You knew that game was going to be into the 80s as far as combining the two scores. Ends up, 58-55. So, I mean, it's just a sad day for both their defenses. And then there's old Dave Doran. Dave Doran and the NC State Wolfpack, a bunch of injuries, and they're not going away. They take care of Florida State. They got Wake Forest coming up. And you start to look at NC State. Why not with NC State? If they win, they knock off Wake. They still got a shot to get to an ACC championship game despite all those injuries. That's a heck of a year for the Wolfpack.
That ACC Atlantic right now, remember, Wake Forest, North Carolina was not a conference game, so Wake Forest still undefeated in the Atlantic side. So that's going to come down to NC State, Wake Forest having the tiebreaker. Don't look now. Clemson 6-3 overall, 5-2. ACC Coastal is going to be fun to watch because you've got Pitt, North Carolina this week, Thursday Night Football, ESPN, Virginia at a conference against Notre Dame this week, and then Miami. Yep. You talk about injuries and depleted. They've won three in a row. They're not out of the ACC Coastal yet. So while we don't think they're going to get a playoff team in the ACC, in fact, we know they won't, don't sleep on what this conference is going to bring us at the end, because there's a lot of fun stories of teams that have not tasted a conference championship in quite some time between Pitt, Wake, NC State. I'm excited to see how this conference finishes.
I'm with you. I just think that NC State Wake game is going to be must see TV. And you know, I think that two of them, you know, they do it different ways.
Yep.
And NC State, if you go back and just look at their season and what they've done, like I said, the injuries, they lost to Mississippi State early in the year. And other than that, they have a 1-point loss to Miami. That's it. That's their only blemish in conference play, a 1-point loss to Miami. Now this big opportunity this weekend against Wake, but we always talk about coaches that potentially looking at maybe awards, postseason awards. If Dave Doran beats Wake Forest with what they've had with these injuries and they end up getting to Charlotte, you can make a strong case for Dave Doran up there as one of the coaches for ACC Coach of the Year.
That's a fun game. NC State Wake. Make sure you watch that this weekend. All right. As we do every week, we are going to end the show with why we love the sport.
That's why we love the sport.
The reason I love the sport this weekend.
This is why I love the sport.
We got Herbie.
I'm always reminded when I get to November, especially in today's day and age with transfer portal and NIL, how much I appreciate teams that we talked earlier about how things don't go well. It's amazing when you see like a Florida, how things, when they start to drop, they just fall fast. And then you look at a Wisconsin and you realize something's going on that's right at a place like Wisconsin, because they were 1-3. Like I said, all their goals in the entire offseason, and I'm not saying all of them because they still could get to Indianapolis, but for the most, when you're sitting there at 1-3, to go to practice on a Monday and a Tuesday, that's hard. Hard to keep it together as a team when some of those big goals are gone. And we're seeing teams in November kind of go away. And we're seeing others that, despite some losses, are okay. They've kind of righted the ship and they're building momentum. And all of a sudden they've kind of re-identified who they are, and they're playing good football. And yeah, they have three losses or four losses, whatever it might be, but man, you don't want to play them. Utah reminds me of a team like that with some injuries and things weren't going well. I just love watching teams. This is the ultimate team game. And in an era where we celebrate individuality on the outside, on Twitter and the noise, it takes a great coach and great players to keep grinding through and playing for each other. And I think we're seeing examples of that all over the country. And I brought up Utah and Wisconsin as a couple examples of that.
Why I love the sport this week. I'll go back to Columbia, South Carolina, and Shane Beamer, first year head coach. I know there were some questions of not whether he was the right guy for the job. He brings such energy and passion and enthusiasm. You want the purity of a win in college football. Look at what Shane Beamer did against Florida. They're hurt. They're on a third string quarterback. They're going through a complete rebuild and gut and start from the beginning. He goes in against a Florida team that has more talent, that should win that game going away. Not only does he get the win, he blows them out. He soaks up every single minute of it on the field with his family, the pictures, the smiling. I just feel good for Shane Beamer this week because of what he did. That's the win that he needs to sell his program. He can recruit. We all know that. But the reason I love the sport, Shane Beamer doing what many thought was not possible, which was blow out Florida. And now the fine people in Columbia, things might not go their way the rest of the season. They can hang their hat on this one for reason for optimism in the future. And hats off to Shane Beamer and what they did this weekend.
Awesome. I love that. That's a great one. That was fun to watch. I think the post-game presser was as cool as anything, you know, with the kids all running out there. That's cool.
He loved it. Yeah. What game do you have this week before we get you out of here?
Game day is at the Grove for Texas A&M and Ole Miss, and I'm staying there to call that game. So we'll be hearing your updates.
By the way, I love that you guys are calling SEC games this year.
It's been a blast, man. Love it. Having a great time doing it. Kind of bounced around this year, you know, in different spots. But, looking forward to calling it. A&M's playing great football. Like I said, their hopes are still alive to go to Atlanta. And Ole Miss with Lane Kiffin, always a lot of fun there too. Had them earlier in the year this year against Louisville.
So that'll do it for this week's edition of the ESPN College Football Podcast on Mondays, which, by the way, the most listened to edition of the ESPN College Football Podcast. So Pollock and you boys, I'd say step up your game, but we'll be as strong as our weakest link. It's okay. For Herbie, I'm Matt. Look forward to next week on the ESPN College Football Podcast.